Welcome to Hope Wesleyan Church, a group of people dedicated to changing lives by leading others into a growing relationship with Jesus. We're so glad you're listening online today. As always, we're saving a seat for you when you join us at our campus in Independence, Iowa. Enjoy the message today and let us know how we can help you grow in your walk with Jesus. I think that as time goes on, as technology advances, we become more and more distracted. Do you agree with that? I mean, I love technology. I think it's a terrific thing, especially when it works. But boy, do we ever get so distracted. Where is all that extra time that these time-saving devices were supposed to provide for us? I don't know where that all went. You know, one of the big distractions, especially for older adults, is television. I mean, because we have to keep following the hee-haw reruns. I mean, that's an important thing we got to keep up with. And so maybe for you, television is a distraction. It probably is not so much a distraction for younger generations, though. Did you know that? Television is not that big of a distraction for the younger generations, but do you know what is? YouTube. Who said YouTube? Definitely YouTube is a huge distraction. Any online video thing, it can be a big distraction. I did a little research. Here's what is happening now. Each day, 300 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute. All right? They're adding 300 hours of new video every minute of every day. That's crazy. And there are YouTube gets about 30 million visitors every day. Almost 5 billion videos are watched on YouTube every single day. That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, another distraction can be our smartphones, isn't it? See, I can remember when we had a computer, but we did not have a smartphone. And so, okay, maybe we were watching videos, but you would walk away from that desktop and that laptop computer, and you didn't see the videos. Well, now the videos are they're accessible right there on your phone there. Yeah, I was having lunch last week, and the topic of rotary phones came up. How many of you remember the rotary phone? Yeah. How many of you still have a rotary phone? I see you. You purists. Yeah, I see you guys. Actually, they still work. They work, and actually, in some ways, they actually give a superior signal than your mobile phones there. But smartphones, man, they're taking over the whole industry for sure. I can remember, though, getting back to rotary phones, I remember we had one growing up in our house, and remember it was one evening this girl named Wendy called me. I was a junior high kid. I don't know, she was talking about something. I don't know what, I really do not know what she was talking about. So Wendy called me, and I was downstairs in the basement on the rotary phone, you know, with the cord that extended out to about like 18 inches away from the wall. I mean, that was a lot of mobility. Like, that was the mobile phone then. Yeah. How many, did you guys have the really super long cord? You guys had that? I mean, you literally could strangle somebody with that thing. Didn't even know it. Strangle the family dog. Did not even know it. So... But I remember, I can still remember this. I told Wendy, I have to go now because my favorite show, The Greatest American Hero, is about to come on TV. You remember that, John? You remember? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. Well, Wendy went one way, and I went another way, and life has moved on there. But here's a shocking stat. The average smartphone user checks their phone 47 times a day. Now, if I'm only awake, let's say 12, if you're able to check it, 12, you can do the math on that. It gets worse, though, when you look at the younger generation, 18 to 24-year-olds, they check their phone 86 times a day. How many of you just checked your phone? Can I issue you a big challenge this morning? Can you turn off the notifications on your phone and not check your phone for the remainder of this service? I know, it's so hard, isn't it? Because it's crazy. It's like, because as soon as that bell rings, and we're like Pavlov's dogs, aren't we? I mean, you have to go check. The problem is the bell rings, but we don't get the treat for it. I mean, that's the only bad thing. I mean, at least the dog got a treat out of it when the bell went off. Some of you need to learn some of your history on that. But my point is this: we live very distracted lives, and it happens so subtly. I mean, we so easily, we can take our eye off the ball. We miss the mark. We get distracted. We get distracted with our marriage. We get distracted in our relationship with our kids. Time is going on. Not just we are distracted, but then everybody else is distracted. And then suddenly we wake up one morning, we're like, where has all the time gone? I wish I just would have spent a little more time looking in the eyes of my kids instead of looking in the eyes of my phone. Let's all try to agree on something this morning. Would you agree that Jesus Christ is one of the greatest people who've ever lived? Do you agree with that? Now, I believe that he is the greatest person who ever lived, but maybe you are not ready to grant him that title. And I totally get that. I mean, you're just trying to figure Jesus out. I totally get that. But if you look through human history and you try to put up, okay, who were the greatest people, the most influential people who have ever lived in all of time, Jesus would have to be in the top 10, if not the top 5, of any honest person's list. And if that is true, if Jesus is one of the greatest people who ever lived, and he was asked, what's the greatest thing a person could do? I would want to know what he had to say. Wouldn't you want to know that? The neat thing is, that's exactly what happened. One day somebody asked Jesus, what's the greatest thing that we could be doing? And we're going to read that story out of Matthew chapter 22, and we'll read that conversation there. And really what is happening, and I'll give you a little context there, there were two main groups of people who were really didn't like Jesus at all. One was called the Pharisees. The others were the Sadducees. These were religious leaders, and they're kind of like the big church leaders, and they were kind of the powerhouse in the spiritual life of Israel. Now, they really didn't get along too well, but when it came to Jesus, they agreed that he was bad business for them. And so they would take turns trying to entrap Jesus and trying to catch him in a misspoken word. And so the Pharisees, they had just got put back in their place for something that they had tried to trap Jesus in. And so they sat down, and then they tagged out, and then one of the Sadducees came forward. And so that's where we pick up the whole story there out of Matthew chapter 22. I'm going to begin reading in verse 34. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. What Jesus is encouraging is a way of living. He is showing a model of how we are to live your life. Now, I need to tell you about this lawyer. He wasn't like the lawyers we had today, wear suits and chase ambulance. That's not the kind of lawyer that he had. Actually, the law they were talking about was the Old Testament law, the first 5 books of the Bible. It's called the law. And this guy was an expert in the law. He would copy the law down, and then he would explain this to people so people would know how you're supposed to keep the law of God. That's the kind of lawyer that he was. And interestingly enough, there's a lot of, if you read the Old Testament, you know there's a lot of rules, a lot of things you're supposed to do, a lot of laws in there. Any of you guys have a guess as to how many laws are in the Old Testament? Give me a number, Diane.
700.
That's a good number. Okay, somebody else, give me another number. 900, all right. Feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, actually the number is 613. So you can write that down. And so when you play Bible trivia, you're going to know that at least, you know that one, right? There are 613 laws in the Old Testament that we're supposed to be keeping. Interesting, 365 of them are negative laws, like don't do this. And so the remaining 248 laws were positive. Do this instead. So don't do these 365, but make sure you do these 248 things every day. Imagine if you were getting out of bed in the morning and there's only 613 things you had to try to keep straight in your life. Man, just I couldn't do it. I would feel like a cat in a rocking chair contest. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to even make it through the morning. But man, that's how they were supposed to live. And so the lawyer asked Jesus a very good question. Here he is. He knows all these laws. He knew the laws that they put on top of those laws and were saying they can keep those laws. And so he asked Jesus, you know, could you boil it all down for us? I mean, if you could take the whole Bible and if you could just summarize it for us in a very simple way, that would be very helpful. And so that's exactly what Jesus did. He asked, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And so that's what Jesus gives him here. I mean, and he what Jesus does for us, he shows us the way of love. And we're going to talk about that this morning, about how we can be loving in three directions. The first direction is that God calls us to love in the upward direction. We are called to develop a growing relationship with God. You see, the art of living is loving. If you want to live right, you need to love right. See, we are designed not only to experience love, but also to express love as well. Growing up on the wrong side of the Mississippi, I was born and raised in Ohio. Where are my people? None of them here. One! And that's the one I brought with me. That'd be my wife. Okay. All right, yeah. Wrong side of the Mississippi River. I wasn't born in Iowa. I got here as fast as I could. Here I am. That's what's important, all right? It's not where you've been, it's where you're going. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And so, grew up in Ohio, grew up on the end of a dead-end street, and I'm the youngest of six kids. I have four siblings that have severe middle child syndrome. I'm the youngest. I saved the best for last, and so that's why they got me. And I grew up there. My mom, she's an amazing cook. She's a French-Canadian. And so she, even now, you know, even now she's 86 as well, and she still has, if you talk to her, she still has that really thick Canadian accent. It's amazing. I remember somebody called my house when I was in high school. They thought I had a maid. Well, kind of. So my mom, she loves to cook, and so as we grew up there, I remember when Amy came, I started bringing Amy over, and we were courting, and I brought her over to visit my parents. My parents, they had this little Cocker Spaniel named Luke. Luke was just a bundle of energy. Whenever we'd walk in the front door, Luke, he would take three laps around the stairs, and he would come over, he'd see Amy, and he would pee on her shoe. I mean, he was so excited, she's mine, can I keep her? I marked her already. I mean, that's every time. He would come over, and he'd pee on her shoe. That's just what he would do. And so after that ritual would happen, we would go into the kitchen eventually. And my mom, she's still cooking for eight people, but there are only just a few of us here. And so it was like Thanksgiving dinner. And we just came, and all this food was out here on the table. And my mom would always say this, and Amy, you know exactly what I'm going to say. She would say, "Eat, Amy, you're going to get thin." So you had to eat, all right? Now, it was just a few weeks ago that I had a craving for my mom's clam chowder. I mentioned that to you, and some of you thumbed your nose at me. And I understand, because some of you all still need Jesus. I'm just saying, it's true. And so I called my mom and said, "Hey, how do you make the clam chowder?" And so she's like, "Oh, Bobby, you have to do that, blah, blah, blah." And she's, get going. And then she starts going in French. And I mean, it's like, okay, this is not going so well. So I wrote down whatever I could, and I found a recipe, and I tried to take the recipe and then try to follow what she said. I went to the store, and I got all the ingredients and put it all together and everything. And, you know, it turned out pretty good. It was close. But there was something missing. It was clam chowder, but it was not my mom's clam chowder. You see, when my mom cooks, she cooks with love. And love is really the secret ingredient of life. So when this lawyer asked Jesus, okay, what is the greatest of all commandments? Jesus points to the secret ingredient. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength. This is the first and the greatest commandment. You know, it is living in an upward direction, developing a growing relationship with God. You know, our love for God, it really is a response of His love for us. I mean, John 3:16 says so well, for God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son. Elsewhere in the Bible it says that we love Him because He first loved us. So when we begin to respond and we begin to love God, we are loving God out of the love that He's already given us. We're loving Him back. I do want to say this morning, and I want to be very clear, no matter what pit you find yourself in today, no matter how dark that your life might seem this very moment, the love of God is reaching you exactly where you are. He loves you precisely as you are. It is His love that is holding you up when you feel like you have nothing else to hold on to. It is that love of God that the team was just singing and we were just worshiping God. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. That's what we're talking about. So how do we develop a growing relationship with God? Well, there are a few things to think about, a lot of ways. I mean, that's a lifetime there. But here's some things that you can be thinking about and try to put into place there. The first way, we can love God by giving Him the best part of the first part of our day. I often prescribe to people as we talk about their spiritual life and how we grow in our spiritual life. When I often prescribe to people, you need a 15-minute miracle. And what I mean by that, you need to take 15 minutes that you just get alone with God. 15 minutes a day, just get alone with Him. It might be that you're out in nature and just enjoying this incredible day that God has made. It might be that you're taking 15 minutes and you're reading the Bible, or maybe you're just taking time to pray, or just take time to listen and just quiet your heart. 15 minutes is short enough that every one of us, we could put that into our day, couldn't we? It's also long enough that we have to set aside some other things and push aside all the other stuff. So if you want to develop a love relationship with God, that's one of the great ways to do that, is just to take time, give God the first part or the best part of your day. A second way to do that is to be able to give God the first choice of all your choices, or maybe the first consideration as you're making any choices. Now, I see a lot of people, but all of my relationships that I have, they are hinged upon another relationship that I have. Amy and I were working on 29 years of marriage. And while I meet a lot of different people, and maybe I'm making plans with other people and talking about, a lot of it hinges on that relationship I have with my wife. And when it comes to a relationship they have with God, that's the very same way. As we are in a relationship with God, and we're trying to love Him and serve Him and get to know Him better, that changes how we conduct ourselves. It changes the choices we make. It adjusts the words that I say. My relationship with God adjusts the thoughts that I think, or what I post online, or what I watch, or even what I think. I'm going to give God the first choice of all of my choices. A third way is to be able to grow in a relationship with God is by giving God the first portion of my income. See, I want to honor God with everything in my life, and that includes my finances. I want to invest in His kingdom. I want other people to come to know Christ. I'd like to have a little part of that. Because I love God, I want to be able to honor Him with the finances that He gives to me. But you know, you can do all of these things. I mean, you can honor Him with your finances, and you can spend some time with Him, and you can give God the first choice and all the choices you make. And you can kind of do all those things, and you can still miss the whole point. Because really what needs to happen is we need to give God, if we're going to have a love relationship with God, we need to give Him first place in our heart. And that's what Jesus is saying, to love the Lord your God with all your heart. That is the central command post of your life. Love the Lord your God with all your soul. That's with all of your emotions and your will. Love the Lord your God with all of your strength. That's all the faculties of your body, how you use your body, how you care for your body. Love Him with all your mind. That's your thought life. The upward call of God is to love all of Him with all of us. This is the upward direction of the love, that a relationship that we are called into. A second direction of love is not only upward, and we have to have the upward part, but also is inward. It's where we cultivate deeper relationships with other believers. You see, as a believer, we are part of the family of God. I mentioned about my pastor when I was baptized, and yeah, he put me under and kind of did a little couple things there, and I came up out of the water. It was a little embarrassing, but you know what was so rewarding? It was that everybody up on that bank, they were just cheering for me, and I knew that I had entered into a brand new family. And they continue to be so supportive. Just last fall, we were able to go back and be able to be part of that church service. We went back in September, and it was like we never left. I mean, the love that we have for them is so incredible. And they are just a small portion of the great family of God that we are a part of. And we are called to be part of that love relationship. Over and over in the Bible says we are to love one another. Jesus even said, by this you will know, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. If we went to Walmart now, and we were to ask, what are Christians known for? What do you think they'd say? Wait, you can tell me. I'm your pastor. I won't tell anybody. Yeah, no, okay, they go to church. Christians go to church, yeah. Some might say Christians are kind of judgmental. Some might say Christians are strict. You know what some of them would say. Some would say Christians are a bunch of... I'd say that. They're just weird. They might say that. Jesus said that what we should be known for is that we love one another. The way we build that, how do we cultivate a love relationship with other believers? That's what we're called to. We're to love our neighbors. And some of those neighbors, you know what? They're part of the family of God. We're to love them. Two people who were, I think, some of the most influential people in the 20th century, Mahatma Gandhi and Mother Teresa. Here's what Gandhi said. He said, I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ. Ouch. Mother Teresa responded to that. She said, Gandhi felt fascinated at knowing Christ. He met Christians and felt let down. We may not like that, but we have to own that. Because you know as well as I do, there's a lot of truth in what both of those people are saying. Now, I know Gandhi is dead and gone, but you know what? There is a whole generation growing up now who are leaving the church. They're not so much rejecting Jesus, but they are rejecting His church. Oh, if we could become a church that is known because we love one another. Do you think that love is still something that this youngest generation desperately needs? Where else are they going to find it? But here in the church. I mean, here we say we're in a love relationship with God. That's great. Let's allow that love to be demonstrated by the way we love each other. The ways we can cultivate that love relationship with each other are, one way is to be able to attend a small group, a group of believers gathered together that we can help each other and just kind of doing life together. That is a terrific way that we can begin to cultivate a love for each other. Another way, by the way, I should say that we have small groups that we have some meet on Sunday mornings, we have one meets on Sunday afternoons, we have some meets on Wednesday nights. If you're looking for a place to plug in, I can help you find that place. Another way, though, that we can cultivate a love for other believers is through serving together. I have some pictures up here that of our junior high youth. This past week, they went to Lexington Estates. They went there to eat pizza, play games, and enjoy some time with the residents over there. How amazing! I want to say thank you, young people. Thank you guys so much for showing us how to go out and serve our community. Let's give them a hand for what they've done. Thank you, guys. Really. And I'm looking at some of the young people who went, and they're like, what I do? That's the point. You didn't even realize what you were doing. You were such a blessing. And you represented Jesus Christ. So I talked to some of the leadership there at Lexington Estates, and they said, your young people, they really were incredible. Spent time to interact and talk and to love people, get to know some of the most incredible residents we have here in our town. Thank you guys for doing that. Serving one another, serving together, rubbing shoulders together. You don't have to know much of anything, but if you love people, you want to serve them, you want to help them. Another way you can cultivate a love relationship is to disciple one another. Now, this is different than going to be part of a small group. Small groups are great. I love them. I lead one. And we're learning together. I lead one. We're doing the parables on Wednesday nights. But discipleship is different, a little different, at least how I'm talking about it right now. It's kind of like a spiritual workout that you go with another person. And we work together to be able to really dig down deep into the spiritual disciplines, to really put into practice the daily rhythms and the graces of walking with Jesus. And we're going to talk more about this here in the coming weeks, but one great place that you can start is discipleshippath.com. You can go there, you can look at some incredible material, it's all absolutely free, and I just want to refer you to that. But you can actually disciple others. If you know people who they're trying to find the handles of the Christian life, how do I really start growing in this thing? You can just come alongside them and say, hey, let's do this together. And it can be transforming. The upward call of God is to love Him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. The inward call is to be able to love each other, love the believers in Christ. But there's one more direction to talk about. It's the outward direction. That's how God's love works. God loves us, and we love each other, and then that love goes outward. It's when we nurture relationships with broken people. I brought something with me this morning that I wanted to show you. I got this. Chloe, do you remember this at all? She's not. You don't. You're acting as if you've never seen this before. I actually received this as a White Elephant gift exchange gift right here at the church a few years ago. I've kept it all these years. Yeah. I have affectionately named it Uncle Merle. I don't have an Uncle Merle, never have, but it's just what it reminded me of. I'm sorry. And I thought I'd bring it with me this morning. And let me get this all set up. Okay. Merle, you won't feel a thing. Because if I were to take a hammer toward Merle, that's not a hammer. If I were to take a hammer toward Uncle, my old Uncle, that's not even a hammer. If I were to take this hammer to Uncle Merle, okay, you can see what's going to happen. By the way, we signed a no-compete and no, all that clause that you're not going to sue me if you happen to get hit here. So if I were to do this, now that's really sad. Now what do we do with this thing? You got duct tape in the car. There's that. Yeah. Okay. Generally, if something like this were to break, yeah, you just throw it away. You could buy 100 of these things if you really wanted to. You could. Not in Japan. You see, in Japan, they have this 500-year-old art form known as kintsugi. And what they do, if something gets broken, if a piece of pottery gets broken, they pick up all the pieces and they take it to a master craftsman. And he painstakingly begins to put all the pieces back together again. He does it. I don't. But they find all the little pieces. And what happens is, obviously, they glue all these together, and they find out how it is. It's all supposed to fit. And, you know, some of these, I don't even know where that goes. You can see, seriously? Was that part of it? Okay. Anyway, you can see what is going to happen. They would put they would glue all the pieces back together again. Okay, that's cool. But then here's where it gets really amazing. That master craftsman, they will take this paint, and mixed into that paint is powdered gold. And every place on that pottery where it's broken, they paint and they highlight all the broken places. And when they get done, that piece of pottery is more valuable than it ever was before it was broken. That is what Jesus calls us as the church to do. We're called to be people who build relationships with broken people, and to help them take all the broken pieces of their life and bring it to the Master Jesus. And He begins to put the pieces of their life back together again. And because of His touch, because of His healing, because of His grace, they become more valuable than ever before. Jesus put it this way. He said, "Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." We are to nurture redemptive relationships with broken people. So here's how we can do that. Next slide, please. We do that by spending time with broken people. And can I say, we are all broken people, aren't we? We're all broken people. But God is putting the pieces of our life back together again. We can start spiritual conversations. Sometimes that's talking. Other times that's listening. Other times that's just walking with God and with them on a daily basis, as they begin to find the pieces and begin to let God have each piece of their life and let Him begin to do the healing. Of course, don't forget to pray. Don't forget to pray that God would guide you in such a way. You can be part of that healing process that sees the value in someone who right now, they might seem pretty broken. But in the eyes of God, they are extremely valuable. So valuable that He would send His one and only Son to win them back for His very own. In your bulletin, there's a response card there, and I want to encourage you to fill that out. In fact, I'm encouraging everybody to fill those out. And where it says there's a place to pray, there's the prayer request there, I'd like you to consider this. Which of those three directions, upward, inward, the body of believers, or outward, in those three directions of love, which of those three directions of love do you need God's help to start growing in? You can say all of them. Well, I get it. Yeah, I know. I live in the biggest room in the world, the room for improvement. I'm there. But maybe there's one in particular this morning as we were talking about this that God really began to say, "Hey, I can help you with this." If you'd like to give them to me right after the service, we will. I'll be praying for you, and I'll be contacting you this week saying, "Hey, here are some ways that you can really grow in that area." Will you join me as we all pray together? Thank you, O Heavenly Father, for the great privilege to gather here and to worship you. I thank you so much for the amazing grace of God that reaches every one of us, no matter where we are, no matter who we are. I thank you that your grace can pull us all back together again, that you call us into a love relationship with you. That's incredible, because I know the kind of life I lived. I know the person that I was, but yet even then you were calling me to love you. Thank you so much that you helped me to respond to your love for me. I want to love you more. I want my life to be an offering to you that shows, God, that every part of me belongs to you. Help me to grow in my love toward you. Help me to grow and to nurture relationships within the body of Christ, within the believers, that we could love one another, that we could be known by our love. And Lord, for those that are broken now and they're trying to hold on to all the pieces of their life and things are just slipping through their fingers, I pray, dear God, that you would use each and every one of us to be able to help them to know that there's a God who loves them even in their brokenness. You can take all the broken pieces of their life and you can make them whole again through the power of your incredible healing touch. Help us now as we continue to love you, to love our family of God,